95.5 FM, KCSN, and KCSN HD1, Northridge, Los Angeles. KSBR and KSBR HD1, Mission Viejo. A service of California State University, Northridge, and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at 88.5FM.org. It's the independent 88.5 FM's Artist in Residence. Curated DJ sets from an 88.5 FM artist every Saturday at 6 with a new artist residency every month.
Hi, we're Lucius.
And we're doing a DJ residency here on the independent 88.5 FM every Saturday at 6 p.m. this month. We're playing songs we love and sharing stories of our favorite music by our favorite artists with you.
This show will be focusing in on the lines between funk and disco and how those genres translated around the world. We've got Laura Leasy from Krungbin with us today, and we are so excited to be playing a bunch of their music, talking about other artists who've informed their sound, their style, and their DNA.
But we've only got an hour, so let's get things started first with Krungbin's Time, You and I on the independent 88.5 FM.
We'll be right back.
Just heard Krungbin's Time, You and I, followed by Saron, Give Me Love, here on the Independent 88.5 FM. We are so thrilled to have Laura Lee from Krungbin in the studio with us today. Laura is an incredible bass player, singer, performer, style icon. So without further ado, Laura, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thanks for taking the time, because I know you're super busy, and being on tour just as a singer, we can relate, it just takes a lot out of you. Honestly, the talking more than the singing was always hardest on me personally, just like all the socialization and the like constant interview. It's really draining.
Taxing, yeah. It's amazing because since pandemic, I mean, because we toured last year during the pandemic and we're stricter than ever. I mean, it's a little bit looser now, but we really kind of got so used to the quiet backstage because there was nobody allowed anywhere because we had to be so bubbled up. Yeah. That now when there's like one extra person backstage, it's like, it's one too many.
Yeah.
Just because... it's so, you know, you're right. It's like the engagement. And I think I'm such an empath that I'm such a natural kind of host normally, that if somebody's backstage, I feel like I need to engage and entertain. But I got to save that for the performance.
And also, we've been cooped up for such a long time. It's only natural that both you and the band and whomever else is coming to see you want to be engaging, want to be close. Like, I mean, it's been such a long time. We actually haven't toured yet. And at the end of next month will be our first time touring in over 2 years. So I'm curious what it's like being back on the road after that, what it feels like.
Yeah, was it your plan to release the record during the pandemic? Was that always the plan?
Well, it was a plan to release it, you know, that year. Mm-hmm. And we, 2019, I 100% burned out. I mean, I think about the way my head felt back in that year. It was so loud in there. Mm-hmm. We toured, I mean, we must have played, I don't know, 125 plus shows. We recorded Texas Sun, part of Texas Moon, Mordecai, and another project. Mm-hmm. It was like, I don't know how we did that and lived. but we were in kind of a rush to finish Mordecai January of 2019. And the plan was to put it out, and we knew that our fans knew it was coming, because we'd had like one Instagram post where we were in the studio and sort of like the tease, and we don't say that much on Instagram. So it was sort of like the fans knew. And I think once the pandemic hit, there was a lot of question marks from our team, whether or not we wanted to wait to put it out or not. And I think we felt like the world needed music, regardless of whether or not it could follow a traditional campaign where you put it out and you tour it and you do the whole thing. Crumbin's never exactly been conventional ever. Mm-hmm. So felt like, why would we wait, you know, to be conventional, I guess. And also at the start of COVID, who knew how long that thing was going to last?
Yeah.
So
I thought like 3 weeks,
four, yeah.
3 weeks.
Yeah.
I was sure.
And then another week and then another week.
And then another month.
Totally. I remember all the memes like on day three, you know, it was like, oh, 3 days, you know, yeah. It's like, oh no, just wait.
Yeah.
But I think what was interesting was that it was really hard for us to know what the reaction was to the album. The internet can only tell you so much. Mm-hmm. If anything, the internet is crueler than people are in person at a show, because you're like over analytical and self-critical as a member of the band. So you take all the bad comments way harsher than the good comments. And then I think we just didn't realize that it did resonate with people, you know, to the point now where we're playing these shows and people know all these new songs, and because there are more words on this record, mm-hmm. it's the first time we actually hear a crowd singing. Mm-hmm. It's like not just na na na's. I mean, the first show we played post-pandemic was Newport Jazz, which I think was probably the most perfect place to play. I mean, Newport folk or jazz, that entire place is such a, it's like a musical hug.
Yeah.
It's such a legacy, but it's a place where people really like respect and admire you, and you can make mistakes or you can try things that are new, and it's a beautiful, you know, place to start. It's been an incredible time to play music. I feel really lucky, because how many musicians get to experience the rush of playing music for people after they've been deprived for so long?
Yeah.
100%. I wonder, you guys were recording during pandemic as well, right? Writing and recording.
Yes.
How did that sort of influence the sound? I mean, was it for us, it was natural that we wanted, for us, it was almost urgency directed towards like dance music, because we felt so deprived, mm-hmm. in that arena. I mean, we had no one, the only community we had was through a screen, really, mm-hmm. and each other.
Yeah.
So, I went like, was that the natural inclination to be making music that made you want to dance?
Interesting. No, I mean, we've been playing more dance music in our live shows. That's for sure. Yeah. In that kind of release escapism, but like a healthy escapism, mm-hmm. Sort of feeling. No, I mean, the music that we, like, for the exception of the Paul McCartney remix, everything that we recorded over the pandemic, we're kind of working on projects we already started. Yeah. So it wasn't like we were kind of coming up fresh, but I'm so happy to hear that that was the way that you took it, because I feel like a lot of people just recorded sad music.
Yeah.
100%.
Because that would be a natural delve.
I mean,
I just felt like at the end of this, do people really want to be hearing, do we really want to be singing about something that's making us somber? Like,
I think at a certain point it was like, we have to push against the tide here, because otherwise we're not going to make it. Because there was no kind of end in sight, you know? And it was like, we can't just get together. Because we were getting together 5 days a week just to write. And we can't just get together and mope 5 days a week. Like, this is not going to pass the time, you know?
We did for the first 2 months. Maybe.
Yeah, but there was a point where we were like, oh, we just want to dance, and then we made a song, and that kind of informed a lot of, you know, the rest of the record, but people seem to be responding, and it sounds like people are responding at your shows too, with like this energy of we're ready.
We need joy. Even if the subject matter has darkness, you know, we need something light-hearted, something to pick us up, something to dance about.
Yeah, 100%. It's also, I mean, you know, music is what it is. It's going to just, you know, it's going to be what it decides to be at any point in time. But if you did spend the whole pandemic writing things in like a somber way, and then we come out of the pandemic by the time it comes out,
yeah,
people are like, dude, I am tired.
Yeah, live me through this. I don't want to hear the soundtrack to this again.
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we know, you know, obviously you guys have been so influenced by Thai and Southeast Asian and world music, and curious to know what led you there, and also what is your first, or what was your very first favorite song? Do you remember?
Like in life, or like
in
a
life.
Thai song?
In life.
She Drives Me Crazy, Fine Young Campbells.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was my first cassette. I think I was 3.
Yeah.
Like really young. And it was a blue cassette tape. I had this pink cassette tape box. It was like a light pink with a dark pink zipper, and it had it said Laura Lee embroidered on it. And the first time I ever got in trouble with my parents, because I threw a tantrum about something, they took that cassette tape away, and I felt the pain.
They knew what to go for.
All right, so let's have a listen to that. This is She Drives Me Crazy by Fine Young Cannibals, right here on the Independent 88.5 FM.
Thank you.
Okay. So how did you get from blue cassette of Fine Young Cannibals, She Drives Me Crazy, to Thai funk and disco?
Mark Spear is the short answer. But no, I went to Thailand and was on the hunt for some records in Thailand and had read about this record shop, and it was spelled D-O-R-E-M-E. And it was run by this like older woman who is apparently some like musical knowledge, like wise woman. And I had been looking for the shop. I assumed it was called Doreen because that's how it was spelled. So I kept asking people, saying, do you know where Doreen is? Couldn't find it. I spent like, Mark was with me. We spent like 2.5 hours looking for the shop. Anyway, after we got nowhere with it, Mark was like, oh my God, it's Do Re Mi. And I was like, of course it's Do Re Mi. And then I went up to the same officer that I had asked like a million times, where's Doreen? And I was like, do you know where Do Re Mi is? He's like, oh yeah, it's right over here. And by the time we got there, it was closed. So it was a sort of weird mission to find the shop, never found it. And then I think somehow that experience led us to look for Thai music. And we'd heard, you know, we'd gone to a couple festivals when we were there, and had heard some local music, and I think it made us interested. Mm-hmm. But we found that, you know, like Dao Ban Don, which was one of the first Thai musicians we really got into, it was very like James Brown inspired. There's a very, you know, West meets East, East meets West thing that happens, and everybody's constantly being influenced by the other side, wherever the other side is. So I think, you know, we got into it because it felt familiar, but it also had, you know, an interesting twist melodically, because, you know, you find that like the Thai language is a tonal language. So they have all of these sounds, like, you know, I don't know what vowels, if you could connect like EU or something, they have like so many different ways of saying that depending on where you put the inflection. Yeah. And I think because of that, their scales are almost more complex. Mm-hmm. And I think that just, it's like familiar enough, but new enough that it was really inspirational at the time.
Let's check out some of this Thai funk. This is Dao Ban Don, Yi Dui Ding Dong on 88.5 FM.
That was really impressive, Holly. Just for a little backstory there, Holly did spend like, what, 6 months of your high school?
Just three.
3 months, mm-hmm, of your high school career studying abroad in Thailand. So she can definitely relate to some of the inspiration that came from Thailand.
ชอบนั่งรถให้เขากดปุ่มน้ำลายไหลนองน้ำ all of our members for making this public radio station possible. The Independent 88.5 FM.
Support for 88.5 FM is made possible by Subaru of Glendale. The Subaru Forester and Outback are ready for your New Year adventure. At the core of Subaru of Glendale's business is their focus on caring for customers, employees, and the community. In the service department, factory-trained technicians use specialized tools and genuine Subaru parts. On Brand Boulevard, just off the 5 and 134 freeways. More information available at SubaruofGlendale.com. That's SubaruofGlendale.com.
Support for 88.5 FM comes from Sagerstrom Center for the Arts.
The Band's Visit is the Tony and Grammy Award-winning musical.
Let me tell you about Petah Tikva, such a city, everybody loves it.
The Washington Post cheers. It's a funny, fish-out-of-water comedy with offbeat charm. The 10-time Tony Award-winning musical, The Band's Visit.
Now at Sagerstrom Center for the Arts in Costa Mesa through April 3rd. For tickets, scfta.org.
Hey, I'm Carmel Holt. Join me for Sheroes Radio, a new show that amplifies female-identifying voices in music across genres and generations. Our playlist and weekly interviews celebrate the trailblazers and the visionaries. Listen to Sheroes every Sunday night at 9 on the Independent 88.5 FM and 88.5fm.org.
The real reason people become rock stars is because they never got a chance to be a DJ. Now they do. The Independent 88.5 FM's Artist in Residence. Each month, a new DJ residency from one of your favorite 88.5 FM artists. Saturday nights at 6.
just heard Nazia Hassan with Boom Boom, followed by Sticky Jones Gang, Tunisian Ride.
This is Lucius, and this is our DJ Disco Takeover on the Independent 88.5 FM. We're here in the studio via Zoom with our friend Laura Lee of Krungbin. An obvious for us with you, visual aesthetic, you know, style has always been an extension of the music, a visual representation of the music. And, you know, it was such an obvious thing in the 60s and 70s. Everybody had some visual representation of their music. I mean, people took dressing so much more, I don't know if serious is the word, but it was just a given that you were going
to... It's like intention.
Intention. Where did that come from for you? Who were your style, musical style icons that first sort of maybe gave you the idea?
I mean, I love Grace Jones. I love Bowie. I love Prince. I think they all probably sound obvious, but I think for me, they embody, you know, artistically kind of, I don't know, what really like gets me inside, you know, that like you turn into somebody when you perform. I love that moment. I mean, I have it with Mark and DJ because I know them so well, but I realize that people must have it with me when they're hanging out with me, you know, backstage or in, you know, normal life. And then they see me on stage and they're like, who is that? You know,
we call it our Clark Kent,
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I mean, I think about it a lot. I think that like Nirvana, so iconic, and they like really made like cut up jeans and a t-shirt incredibly iconic. And I think that that was really intentional and really gorgeous in that presentation. But I think something happened afterwards where it was like bands just wore t-shirts and jeans, which is cool. But I think it's hard to be impactful if everybody's doing the same thing. And I really like a show. I really like seeing a show, you know, Elton John, you go see Elton John. He's got like four costumes a night and they're amazing.
Yeah.
When I saw Bootsy Collins, he had at least four costume changes. And it's like when you eat food, like if a sandwich is cut into triangles instead of rectangles, it feels like it tastes different.
Yeah.
I like, you know, we were instrumental at the beginning and fully instrumental. And how do you capture people's attention with slow groups, especially at festivals, especially at South by Southwest, which is the first festival we played, where you're competing with incredible amount of musicians and talent.
Yeah.
That to stand out, you really have to present something that grabs people.
Yeah, and we were talking about this the other day, too, when you're a young band. I mean, this was the case for us. It's kind of like you become your stage set. You know, we didn't have the money, basically, to have, like, a huge stage set to put on a theatrical show, and so you kind of become that, you know, yourselves by dressing yourselves and creating this sort of character. And
yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so great as you get bigger and you get to, like, work on that production, but it starts at that stage where you're talking about. And I remember for our very first show, like I went to a mall that everything is like pretty cheap. And I went there to find just like crazy stuff that you could get inexpensively, but on stage looks big.
Totally.
Yeah. You know?
Well, what about disco music? Like, really drew you in, because we've pretty much just like gotten to know each other a little bit better, but highlight of, you know, certainly our new record is really inspired by disco, and curious how that era of music and genre of music took you, because it seems like it really did.
Yeah. Disco is just It's so special as an entire genre. It's so special. I think that music from when I was little to now is a form of escapism, but in a healthy way, because I think there are healthy escapes and not healthy escapes. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's important to, you know, release. It's important to connect and release. So if you're feeling down and you need to like really feel down and you want to listen to that music and really immerse yourself in whatever that mood is, that's also amazing. But then I feel like when people are like really struggling, and I have struggled a lot in my life, stuff. I mean, I'm not the only musician who's been an outcast. I think that's probably, but you know, pretty across the board. But I feel like disco kind of was that feeling for outcasts. It was like a place where you could go to the club and dance all of your pain away, or dance all of whatever it is away. Mm-hmm. I moved to London almost a decade ago for a few years, and that was like the time in my life where I danced the most. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'll go, you know, I can go listen to techno and get into it, but I mean, I want to go see disco. I want to go listen to disco because it's so joyous. Mm-hmm. Horse Meat Disco, I don't know if you're like familiar with them, but they have residency in London. They're amazing. It's like gay disco specifically. Mm-hmm. And what's the most incredible thing at their shows is that every single person is dancing and every single person is smiling. Right. And that is so special, you know. So yeah, I like it from that perspective. I love the watching people feel free.
There is something about it. Also, we were talking about this a couple episodes ago, like where the line between disco and funk sort of lies. And it does feel like disco has this sort of like trancey thing that funk maybe doesn't. Funk's obviously like they're both groove based, but I'm curious where that line lies for you, like where you feel the difference.
Yeah, I think the trance, I use that word too, and I realize it's like it's hypnotic. It's like that you're kind of it's trance in the sense that you're all of a sudden you're like in this loop. And it allows you to just kind of stay in the loop. And the beautiful thing about like really skilled disco and house producers is that it's like it is a loop, but then there's these changes that happen every so often that keep you engaged throughout a 12-minute disco edit. It's like incredibly skillful, you know, to create that sort of movement. But yeah, I mean, you know, every time people ask me what genre krumbin is, I used to just say, I have no idea. And then that makes me sound equally like douchey or something because I don't know. It's really hard to come across. And I heard DJ the other day answer, everybody says it's something different. And so sort of like, that's kind of, you know, what I say now, but we're like, all into the genre bending thing, but I think it's because there's so many genres of music that intersect. So it's like disco does intersect with funk, and disco does intersect with house music, and both of those kind of go in their own direction. Like Giorgio Moroder and Donna Summer, like that's like the disco house crossover, you know, when that started happening. When I moved to London, I was going out dancing a lot. I all of a sudden was hanging out with a bunch of, you know, house music DJs, and I called Mark and I was like, Mark, I need help. I need to learn about house music. I was like, I don't know what it is. It's never been my thing, you know? And that's where he told me to start. He was like, dude, just go listen to Donna Summer first.
Yeah.
And then we can go from there. And so like, but I love that point of disco where it kind of change to that more hypnotic trancey thing that you're talking about,
because
it can keep a dance crowd engaged for literally hours.
Yeah.
We've been playing I Feel Love recently in our set, and it's so just the bass, like the it's so trancey, but it's just So good.
I saw Giorgio Moroder DJ a few years ago, and I mean, he's up there in age, and he just played all of his songs, including that one, like was just DJing them, and it was amazing. And I had a couple too many drinks, and I like totally went into his dressing room and like hugged him and was the annoying fan. and I was convinced that he enjoyed my company.
He probably did.
But that song is like, yeah, that's the song.
Yeah.
Like that song created an entire new era of music. Yeah.
100%.